Hello there, it's Silly and Sissy time, and guess what? It's the last day of reading The Wizard of Oz. Can you believe it? We've made it a long way, baby. And we got chapter 22, and we'll move on to our next public domain book, because books rock. And now let's read another poem from Shel Silverstein, shall we? Sleeping Sardines. I'm tired of eating just beans, says I, so I've opened a can of sardines. But they started to squeak. Hey, we're trying to sleep. We were smuggled up tight till you let in the light. You big silly sap, let us finish our nap. Now close up the lid, so that's what I did. Will somebody please pass the beans? 1 inch tall. If you were really only 1 inch tall, you'd ride a worm to school. The teardrop of a crying ant would be your swimming pool. A crumb of cake would be a feast, and last you 7 days at least. A flea would be a frightening beast, if you were 1 inch tall. If you were only 1 inch tall, you'd walk beneath the door, and it would take about a month to get down to the store. A bit of fluff would be your bed, you'd swing upon a spider's thread, and wear a thimble on your head, if you were 1 inch tall. You'd surf across the kitchen sink upon a stick of gum. You couldn't hug your mama, you just have to hug her thumb. You'd run from people's feet in fright. To move a pen would take all night. This poem took 14 years to write, because I'm just 1 inch tall. Right, one more poem. Enter the deserted house. But please, in honor of Halloween, we'll read this one. But please walk slowly as you do. Frogs dwell here and crickets too. Ain't no ceiling, only blue. Only blue jays dwell here, and sunbeams too. Floors are flowers, take a few. Ferns grow here, and daisies too. Whoosh, whoosh, to wit, to woo. Bats dwell here, and hoot owls too. Ha ha, he ha. Gnomes down here, and goblins too. And my child, I thought you knew. I dwell here, and so do you. Should we do one more? Well, that was a great one in honor of Halloween, wasn't it now? Sick. I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and a purple bumps. My mouth is wet and my throat dry. I'm going to bleed in my rocket eye, my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more. That's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut, my eyes are blue. It might be stigmatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure that my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My back is wrenched, my ankle's sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold, my toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff, my voice is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth, I think as my hair is falling out. My elbow's bent, my spine ain't straight. My temperature's 108. My brain is shrunk, I cannot hear. There is a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail and my heart is... What? What's that? What's that you say? Today is Saturday? Oh, goodbye, I'm going out to play. Oh, silly girl. She wasn't sick at all. All right, well, next time we'll read Upstairs. Well, I'm so glad that you came to play with us today. Hello, hello, I'm happy to know you. I'm happy to be your friend. I'm happy to sing songs with you. Today and every day, we shall be friends. So yay for friends! Yay, yay, yay! Well, guys, thanks for coming to play and hear the last version of The Yellow Brick Road. I have some news about The Yellow Brick Road. There's a version for 1925. That's almost 100 years ago. 95 years ago. Can you imagine the silent version of it that you can check out? And it's based on this book. There's another version from 1940, which is also a very long time ago. 1945 or something, maybe 50, with Judy Garland. So that's 25 years less, 95, 85, 75, 70 years ago. or so. But this one, in this book I'm reading, of course, we said it's from 1925 too. And so soon after, they made a book out of it. Check it out. Anyway, so when we left off, and you'll see very differences between this Wizard of Oz and the one with Judy Garland, but watch both. So when we left off, the lion conquered, was about to conquer his beast and show everyone that he was king. And he said, well, I'll come back when Dorothy is gone. So 22, the country of the Quadlings. The travelers passed through the rest of the forest in safety, and when they came out from its gloom, saw before them a steep hill covered from top to bottom with green pieces of rock. That'll be a hard climb, said the Scarecrow, but we must get over the chill nonetheless. So he laid the way, and the others followed. They had nearly reached the first rock when they heard a voice cry out. Keep back! Who are you? Said the Scarecrow. Then a head showed itself over the rock, and the same voice said, the hill belongs to us, and we don't allow anyone to cross it. But we must cross it, said the Scarecrow. We're going to the country of the Quadlings, but you shall not, replied the voice. And there stood from behind the rocks the strangest man the travelers had ever seen. He was quite short and stout, and had a big head, which was flat at the top and surrounded and supported by a thick neck full of wrinkles. But he had no arms at all. And seeing this, the Scarecrow did not even fear that so helpless a creature could prevent them from climbing the hill. So he said, I'm sorry not to do as you wish, but we must pass over your hill whether you like it or not. And he walked boldly forward. As quick as lightning, the man's head shot forward, and his neck stretched out until the top of his head, where it flat, stuck the Scarecrow in the middle and sent him tumbling over and over down the hill. Almost as quickly as it came, the head went back to the body, and the man laughed harshly as he said, ha, 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 it isn't as easy as you think. A chorus of boisterous laughter came from the other rocks, and Dorothy saw hundreds of the armless hammerheads upon the hillside, one behind every rock. The lion became quite angry at the laughter caused by the Scarecrow's mishap and gave a thundering roar, ah-her, that echoed like thunder. He dashed up the hill. Again a head shot swiftly out, and the great lion went rolling down the hill as if he had been struck by a cannonball. Dorothy ran down and helped the Scarecrow to his feet, and the lion came up to her, feeling rather bruised and sore, and said, it is useless to fight people with shooting heads. No one can come withstand them. What can we do then? She asked. Call the winged monkeys, suggested the Tin Man. You still have the right to command them once more. Very well, she whispered, and putting on the golden cap, she uttered the magic words. The monkeys were prompt as ever, and in a few minutes the entire band stood before her. What are your commands? Inquired the king of the monkeys, bowing low. Carry us over the hill to the country of the Quadlings, answered the girl. It shall be done, said the king, and at once the winged monkeys caught the four travelers and towed them up their arms and flew away with them. As they passed over the hill, the hammerheads yelled with vexation and shot their heads high in the air, but they could not reach the winged monkeys, which carried Dorothy and her comrades safely over the hill and set them down in the beautiful country of the Quadlings. This is the last time you can summon us, so goodbye and good luck to you. Goodbye, said, and thank you very much, returned the girl, and the monkeys rose into the air and were out of sight in a twinkling. The country of the Quadlings seemed rich and happy. There was field upon field of ripening grain with well-paved roads, and the fences and houses and bridges were all painted bright red, just as they had been painted yellow in the country of the Winkies and blue in the country of the Munchkins. And the Quadlings themselves, who were very short and fat and looked chubby and good-natured, were dressed all in red, which showed up bright against the green grass and the yellow grain. The monkeys had set them down near a farmhouse, and the four travelers walked up to it and knocked at the door. It was opened by the farmer's wife, and when Dorothy asked for something to eat, the woman gave them all a good dinner, with all kinds of cake and four kinds of cookies and a whole bottle of milk for Toto. How far is it to the castle of Glinda? Asked Dorothy. It's not a great way. Take the road to the south and you will soon reach it, said the farmer's wife. Thanking the good woman, they started afresh and walked by the field and rose the pretty bridges, across the pretty bridges, until they saw before them a very beautiful castle, before the gates with three young girls dressed in a handsome red uniforms. Why have you come to the South Country, they asked, to see the good witch who rules here. Let me have your name, and I will ask Glinda if she will receive you. They told who they were, and the girl came back, and the girl went to the castle. After a few minutes, she came back to say that Dorothy and the others were admitted at once. 23. The good witch grants Dorothy's wish. Oh, yay! Before they went to see Glinda, however, they were taken to the room of the castle where Dorothy washed her face and combed her hair, and the lion shook the dust out of his mane, and the scarecrow patted himself into his best shape, and the woodman polished his tin and oiled his joints. When they were all quite presentable, they followed the soldier girl into a big room where the witch Glinda sat upon the throne of revels. She was both beautiful and young to their eyes. Her hair was rich red in color and fell in flowering ringlets over her shoulders. Her dress was pure white, but her eyes were blue. "What can I do for you, my child?" she asked. Dorothy told the witch all of her story, how the cyclone had brought her to the land of Oz, how she had found her companions, and of that wonderful adventures they had met with. "My greatest wish now is to get back to Kansas, for Aunt Em will surely think anything dreadful has happened to me, and that will make her go into mourning, and unless the crops are better this year than they were last, I'm sure Uncle Henry cannot afford it." Glinda leaned forward and kissed the sweet girl. "Bless your dear heart, I'm sure I can tell you of a way to get back to Kansas." Then she added, "But if I do, you must give me the golden cape." "Willingly," exclaimed Dorothy. "Indeed, it was of no use to me now. When you have it, you can command the winged monkeys 3 times. "And I think I'll need their service just 3 times, answered Glinda, smiling. Dorothy then gave her the golden cape, and the witch said to the scarecrow, "What will you do when Dorothy has left us?" "I will turn to the Emerald City, for Oz has made me its ruler, and the people like me. The only thing that worries me is how to cross the Hill of the Hammerheads. By the means of the golden cape, I shall command the winged monkeys to carry to the gates of the Emerald City, for it would be a shame to deprive the people of such a wonderful ruler." "Am I really wonderful?" asked the Scarecrow. "You are unusual," replied Glinda. Turning to the Tin Woodsman, she asked, "What will become of you when Dorothy leaves this country?" He leaned on his axe and thought a moment, then said, "The Winkies were very kind to me, and wanted me to rule over them after the Wicked Witch died. I am fine to the Winkies, and if I could get back again to that country of the West, I should like nothing better than to rule over them forever." "My second command to the Wicked Monkeys," said Glinda, "is you'll be carried safely to the land of the Winkies, and your brains may not be so large to look at as those of the Scarecrow. But you are really brighter than he is when you are well polished, and I'm sure you will rule the Winkies very well." Then the witch looked at the big shaggy lion and asked, "And when Dorothy has returned to her own home, what will become of you?" "Over the Hill of the Hammerheads lies a grand old forest, and all the beasts that live there have made me their king. If I only could get back to this forest, I would pass my life very happily there." "Well, my third command to the winged monkeys shall be to carry you to their forest, and having used up the powers of the golden cape, I shall give it to the king of the monkeys, that he and his band may be there forever free. May therefore be free forevermore." Yay! Even the winged monkeys win. The Scarecrow and the Tin Woodsman and the Lion now thank the Good Witch earnestly of her kindness, and Dorothy exclaimed, "You're certainly as good as you are beautiful, but you have not yet told me how to get back to Kansas." "Oh, your silver shoes will carry you over the desert," replied Glinda. "If you had known their power, you could have gone back to your Aunt Em the very first day you came to this country." "But then I should never have had my wonderful brains," said the Scarecrow. "I may have passed my whole life in the farmer's cornfield, and I should not have had my lovely heart," said the Tin Woodsman. "I might have stood resting in the forest until the end of the world, and I should have lived a coward forever, and no beast in all the forest would have had a good word to say to me." "That is all true, and I am glad," said Dorothy, "I was of use to these good friends, but now that each of them has had what they most desired, and is each happy, I think I should like to go back to Kansas. The silver shoes have wonderful powers, and one of the most curious things about them is that they can carry you any place in the world in 3 steps. and each step will be made in the wink of an eye. All you have to do is knock your heels together 3 times, yay, and command the shoes to carry you wherever you wish to go. There's no place like home. There's no place like home, Auntie M. If that is so, I will ask them to carry me back to Kansas at once. She threw her arms around the lion's neck and kissed them. Then she kissed the Tin Woodsman, who was weeping in a way most dangerous to his joints. But she hugged the soft stuffed body of the Scarecrow in her arms instead of kissing his painted face, and found she was crying herself at this sorrowful parting from loving comrades. Glinda the Good Witch stepped down from her ruby throne to give the little girl a goodbye kiss, and Dorothy thanked her for all the kindness she had shown to her friends. Dorothy now took Toto up solemnly in her arms, and having said one last goodbye, she clapped the heels of her shoes together 3 times. Tap, 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 take me home to Auntie M. Instantly, she was whirling round through the air so swiftly that all she could see or feel was the wind whistling past her ears. The silver shoes took her but 3 steps, and then she stopped so suddenly that she rolled over the grass several times. At length, however, she sat up and looked about her. Good gracious, she cried, for she was sitting on the broad Kansas prairie, and just before her was the new farmhouse Uncle Henry built after the cyclone and carried away the old one. Uncle Henry was milking the cows in the barnyard, and Toto had jumped out of her arms and was running toward the barn, barking. Dorothy stood up and found she was in her stocking feet, for the silver shoes had fallen off in her flight through the air and were lost forever in the desert. Chapter 24. Home again. Aunt Emma had just come out of the house to water the cabbages, and when she looked up and saw Dorothy, she cried, "My darling child, where in the world did you come from?" "From the land of Oz. And here's Toto, too. And oh, Aunt Emma, I'm so glad to be home again." The end. When I was a child, there was 3 places that I would have given anything to visit. One was England in the days of the King Arthur. Another was the Wild West of Hopalong and Cassidy, and the other, quite different world, was the wonderful land of Oz. Arthur's England and Hoppy's West were confined to earthly borders. The landscape of Oz, however, spread across the limited reaches of a child's mind. Oz was large, as small as I wished it to be, and like Alice in Wonderland, it was populated with such extraordinary creatures that I knew that anything might happen there. It was a place where the laws of our universe seldom applied. My yearning to visit Oz has not diminished with the passing years. The idea of wandering among the Winkies and Munchkins remains as appealing as ever. So it was with great joy that I accepted the assignment to paint Oz. I count myself as one of the most fortunate of beings. This is the person who did the drawings. For as an artist, I have not only the pleasure, but the duty to daydream. It is part of my work. I have been a contented daydreamer all my life, often to the exasperation of those around me. While creating the illustration for Oz, I would slip away. My hands went about their business while my mind walked along the quadlings and the fierce cadels. Through those visits, I came to know Oz, and those paintings are the fruits of my journey. L. Frank Baum wrote The Wizard of Oz at the dawn of the 20th century, and it is as bright and fresh now as it was the day it was written. I find it curious that the story of Oz is so well known by so many Americans, and yet relatively few have actually read the book. Many have become familiar with Oz through the movie, but the movie and the book are quite different. It is my hope that with this new edition, children and adults alike will journey down the yellow brick road and for the first time experience as Oz created it. Michael Shea. And so if you read this book, you shall see the artist. So tell your mom and dad you want to see the artist. And this one, this publication, was, I'm looking at the date. Oh my goodness. Well, this one actually wrote this one. Oh no. Oh, this one is from 1982, which is a long time ago. And at that age, I was 10 years old. 10? 82. 9. I was 9 years old when this was written. And that's how old I got this book, a long time ago. But that's a long time ago. Just the same. Not as long as 1925, though. But now let's read about the author and check out the drawings. Liam Frank Boyan was born in 1856, that's a long time ago, to a wealthy oil family in Chattanooga, New York, a restless man, more a dreamer than a businessman. Baum spent many years shuffling from one job to another. He began his career managing a chain of theaters and tried his hand at acting and writing plays. When his father's health began to decline, Baum simply could not keep the family afloat. In 1888, he moved to the South Dakota frontier, where he opened a small variety store, which he called Baum's Bazaar. His general lack of business sense and his characteristic kindness were not a profitable combination. He would not take money from the needy, and by the time he went bankrupt, he had 161 non-paying customers. Next, he took over one of the town's newspapers, which he published for several years, until it too went bankrupt. Moving on to Chicago, he had several other false starts. He became a reporter, then a road salesman of china and glassware, before founding an association of window decorators in Chicago. Putting his financial disasters behind him, Baum turned to writing, hoping that books might become a means of support for his wife and their four children. In 1897, Mother Goose in prose was published, and Father Goose, his book, followed 2 years later. Both those books were well received and encouraged Baum to devote himself to writing. Despite his success with those early works, however, Baum had a difficult time finding a publisher for what would ultimately become a children's classic, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Baum dropped the word wonderful from the title some years later. All the publishers who read the manuscript felt that it was too radical a departure from the conventional children's literature of the day. Finally, a small Chicago publisher agreed to publish it on the condition that Baum and the illustrator W.D. Danso pay all expenses. The book was published on August 1st, 1900. Wow. And by November, it had already been reprinted twice. Although he never planned to write more Oz books, Baum received so many entertaining letters from children that he went on to write 13 others. The series achieved such popularity that after his death in 1919, several other writers took up where he left off and wrote 26 additional Oz books. The Wizard of Oz took on every possible form. There were plays using the characters, one of which appeared on Broadway. There were puppet shows, records, silent films, and of course the famous MGM picture starring Judy Garland as Dorothy. Baum was a modest gentleman who enjoyed talking and telling stories to all who would listen. With Oz, he created a land which children have always found real. But the land of Oz also reflected Baum's deep beliefs about this world. American values of freedom and independence were dear to him. The city of Oz is a utopian place where there's no money and no one is rich or poor. Disease does not exist and people happily balance work and play. Baum prized both self-reliance and individualism, and his characters ran into trouble when they lacked either of those qualities. One need not understand all the satirical moments or the allegorical themes in the books to enjoy them fully. Oz, that far-off land of make-believe, with its strange yet credible creatures, clearly possesses a special magic that has touched millions of readers around the world for more than 80 years. And maybe even longer now. Almost 100 years, right? Well, and that is it. Well, I learned something new, and maybe you did too. There's other Wizard of Oz books. I'm going to go find them. Maybe we'll read the next one. I didn't know there's over 26. Well, thanks for listening, guys. I'm so glad that you came in and you enjoyed The Wizard of Oz. And, well, I'm going to say goodnight. Good night, goodbye, farewell. See you real soon. Like you guys so much. Have a special night. Special day. Anything you want.